Go ahead. And I'd also like to acknowledge President, CEO of Mount McKinley Bank, where I have 7 bank accounts.
Thank you.
And sadly, she'll be retiring.
Yes.
After a wonderful, long, and industrious career. And I thank her for signing up again to be on this. Yet, I didn't give her a choice.
No, I didn't really feel that it was an option.
Thank you very much for what you do. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Anyway, if you would, bring us through what we're going to look at.
Okay, should I go ahead and start? Okay, perfect. So we provided a pamphlet here, which has a few pages, but we're hoping to give a good overview of kind of where the fund has been and what we recent returns have been, as well as kind of a look into what we'd expect over the long term. Before I go into my comments, I just want to introduce myself. My name is Brandy Nicolai. I'm the Chief Investment Officer of Multi-Asset Strategies, which basically means if you own a lot of different asset classes, my team's responsible for the portfolio. Our firm, Alaska Permanent Capital, has been working with the city for about 27 years. We've had a long relationship, and we have some good reflection of the success of that relationship here in our report. Before I start, I'm going to let Blake introduce himself.
My name is Blake Phillips. I'm a director with Alaska Permanent Capital Management. I'm the director of institutional solutions, so I oversee all of our institutional client relationships, help with strategic planning, and most importantly, just make sure that our clients are receiving everything that they need to the fullest extent that we can.
I see Bernard's here. Bernard, how long have you been on this group?
Well, I was trying to figure that out because I was appointed when I was on the council. And once my term expired, I was off. So that was about 6 years. And then I was off for maybe a year or two and was reappointed in my public citizen role for probably about 10 or 12 years.
We appreciate you, sir. Thank you.
My pleasure.
I so appreciate the continuity of the members of that board. Thank you.
Okay, perfect. If you look at the first page here where it says 27 years of investment success, I want to highlight a few things here. Starting with the first bullet point, which is just to remind ourselves of the purpose of the permanent fund, which is to maximize income for capital and operating expenses for the city and preserve and trust assets for future generations. And so this is something that the investment committee remains mindful of. We keep all of our decisions and recommendations anchored in the purpose of the fund. If we look at the return since inception, it's been 5.74%, but recall that over the past several decades, we've had different asset allocation strategies that have been deployed. It originally started as just a bond portfolio. Now we own about 13 different asset classes. So if you look at the return of the permanent fund since March 2017, which is essentially the time where it became a risk profile similar to what we own today, the return has been 6.67%. Again, as a third bullet point points out, we have evolved over time with new strategies that are actually offered in the financial markets, as well as to provide the best diversification for the fund and earn the returns that we need. We now own 13 different asset classes. We go through a prudent investment management process and essentially have a systematic way that we manage the fund in terms of assessing historical performance, revisiting our asset allocation strategy, and then thinking about forward-looking market conditions and what returns we could expect from the portfolio. APCM brings forth any recommendations to the investment committee if we have any changes to our strategy that we think are important to maintaining your returns in the future. And so this process has really been beneficial. If you look at the bottom of this page, you can see that since inception with APCM, the fund has made deposits of $111.4 million. You've had withdrawals of $129.4 million, and you still have $150.9 million as at the end of December 31st, 2024. So we've had great success with the fund, kind of making sure we're following that systematic investment management process. Before I leave this page, I want to address the last bullet point that you see there in regards to Blue Umbrella. So Alaska Permanent Capital was started in the 90s by a gentleman, Dave Rose, who was actually the first executive director of our State of Alaska Permanent Fund. When he left that role, he started our firm to provide institutional investment management services to the state of Alaska. And when he retired, his son, Evan Rose, took over the firm and has been CEO for the past couple of decades. And Evan is starting his succession plan and is looking to retire. He doesn't have any family members who are going to remain in place to run the firm. So he's decided to sell his majority shares to a private holding company here in Alaska. I think the important takeaways that you need to know about the transaction are that it was really important to the Rose family that our business stays in place as is, that the new majority owners would actually allow us to continue operating with the personnel and the people that we already have in place that has made the firm successful. Since I've been working at the firm, we've grown in terms of the number of employees that we have. We have people in key roles, and all of those people are going to stay in their roles after the transaction, which is expected to close in April. But I wanted to make the council aware of this ownership change. We've been communicating this message prior to the public announcement with Margarita. We reviewed all of the information and answered the investment committee's questions in our meeting just prior to this. But given that change and the importance of it, I just wanted to make sure I paused here for a moment to see if the council has any questions about that. Anchorage.
Okay, just check. Thank you.
All right. So if you open up the pamphlet, I'm going to cover the materials on the left-hand side. We're going to talk a little bit about performance in the top portion of the graphic there. You can see this is performance ending December 31st, 2024. And the blue bar is the actual permanent fund investment portfolio, and the orange bar is your strategic benchmark. But you could kind of think of that strategic benchmark of the mix of all those different 13 asset classes that we think will earn the return that you need over the long term. You can see on a one-year basis, the portfolio is up 10.3%. We've had two back-to-back years of solid performance. If you look at the quarter-by-quarter 2024 performance, you can see most of that performance came in the first quarter and the third quarter of this year. And down below, we're recapping, you know, all the different asset classes that the fund owns and their returns in 2024. And you can see we had this backdrop where all asset classes had positive returns. Risk control asset classes such as bonds and cash were up anywhere between, you know, 1 to 5%. Again, here, just the overall market dynamic with interest rates beginning to start to come down after the COVID crisis has been helpful. We have interest rates now at levels that we haven't seen in decades, and that's providing some good income to the permanent fund. If you look at risky assets, these are things like high yield bonds and global stocks. You can see US large company stocks in particular had an outstanding year, up 25%. And you can see other asset classes within the equity markets up anywhere between 3.8 to 14%, basically. Alternative asset classes we hold within the fund in order to provide some inflation protection as well as diversification from stocks and bonds. And you can see those asset classes in red, and they were up anywhere between 4 and 8%. So we had this backdrop last year with key central banks declining interest rates and also positive economic growth. And that really helped all asset classes perform well across the board. If you look onto the right-hand side of the pamphlet, you can see the 2025 outlook and macro backdrop. And so I just kind of wanted to make some key points here. One is where you see the blue bar chart and the dots. This is really just giving you a valuation of the equity markets. And so we'd say the equity markets aren't particularly cheap. Basically, people are excited about the future and they're willing to pay more for a dollar of earnings today. And so that has really led to U.S. stocks in particular being kind of expensive. So in order for the equity markets to continue to perform well this year, we need to see earnings that are solid. And if you look at the blue and purple and gray bar chart onto the right-hand side, you can see key economies and their earnings growth expectations, which are all positive. And so when we kind of combined the fact that that the stock market isn't particularly cheap, but earnings growth is still positive, then that kind of leads us to believe that we should have some positive single-digit returns for the equity side of the portfolio for the fund, a little bit different than what we've experienced in the past 2 years where we've had double-digit returns from the equity markets. If you look at the left-hand portion where you see blue and red and orange and green bars, these are all key economies and these are economic growth expectations. And I think the takeaway here is that when we look at economic growth conditions for 2025, they still remain positive. And so that's important because that positive economic growth backdrop will be supportive for corporate earnings, which again, I think is important to the equity market returns. And then the blue line chart that you see here is just an index that tries to measure policy uncertainty within the markets, and you can see it's starting to be elevated. Of course, we all know we have some policy changes with the new U.S. administration that could change the course of the economy. It could change the course of corporate earnings, all of which are very important. So we're talking about things like tariffs, immigration policies that could impact the outlook. But for now, the outlook remains positive, and I think that the permanent fund should be in a backdrop where we could expect some more positive earning or positive returns, just more subdued than what we've experienced in the past couple of years. So in the words down below on the page, you could just kind of see some of the key areas that we're trying to position the permanent fund portfolio, just given our near-term market outlook. I think a couple of key takeaways here are that within the equity markets, we like small company stocks in the U.S. that can produce higher quality earnings. We think that's a good place to be a little bit more domestically focused given the policy challenges that we could have related to tariffs. And then we also like European financials. And so I think that particular area of the international space looks attractive in terms of being attractive valuations, but also having positive earnings and in a backdrop where the European Central Bank is also decreasing interest rates, which should be helpful for that space. And so the last thing I want to highlight as it relates to near-term portfolio positioning is our overweight to gold. And so we have some commodities exposure within the fund, primarily to help us with inflation protection. And that core holding is diversified. It owns many different types of commodities. We're peeling off a portion of that and adding to just gold as a sector because we think it provides a good hedge in some of the risks that we face in the coming year, which could be sanctions against other countries or higher U.S. debt levels. And I think gold in particular might provide a good hedge in the portfolio. So that kind of summarizes, our near-term outlook and some of the things that we're thinking about doing are instituting in the permanent fund. Again, I just want to reiterate the purpose here is that our team thinks about near-term market conditions. We operate within the investment policy that has been given to us, and we think about how can we make some modest tilts in the permanent fund portfolio based upon near-term market conditions to either improve returns or reduce risks. And so the areas that I just highlighted give you some idea of what we have instituted for 2025 so far. If you turn to the back page, it says planning for the future, and I just want to talk a little bit about our longer-term outlook. So beyond thinking about near-term market conditions, our investment team comes together once a year, and we assess kind of where these different asset classes are priced that the permanent fund owns. We also think about, longer-term economic growth expectations and what we think the portfolio can actually return, over a long time horizon, a 10-year time horizon. And that practice is really important part of our investment process because it allows us to integrate current market conditions and think about those forward-looking returns. And I think the bond market is a really good example of why it's important. Before the COVID crisis, we saw interest rates come down over multiple decades. We had to reduce our return expectations going forward because of that environment. And then we saw that, of course, reverse post-COVID as inflation hit. And so our team is really thinking about you know, not only how the perm fund has returned historically, but what are we well positioned for the future? And so here I wanted to point out in the second bullet point here that over a 10-year horizon, we anticipate the current asset allocation strategy can return approximately 6.8% on average over 10 years. We think that in order to achieve that return, we have to have a certain amount of risk in the portfolio. And with that comes, you know, ups and downs that we could experience. And so it wouldn't be surprising to us at all for the permanent fund to have an annual return anywhere between down 13.1% or up 31.4%. So that's kind of the range of returns we'd expect to experience over a 10-year horizon. And then those returns should average around that 6.8 or 7%. So we have a distribution that you take each year of 4.5%. And so if our return projections going forward are correct, that reserves us of about 2.3% for inflation protection. And so I just wanted to provide that outlook. We were just talking at the investment committee level that our team will update these numbers by the end of the first quarter, and we'll share that information with the investment committee and let you know if we have any recommended changes. But I think the portfolio is well diversified and positioned to earn a return that funds your 4.5% distributions and also has some inflation protection. I want to close my remarks by talking about the table down below because it does highlight for you in the gray area chart just the market value of the permanent fund over time since inception. Again, the current market value at the end of December is $150.9 million. But down below, you can see the calendar year returns that you've actually experienced through time. And so we've been through a lot of different situations, including the financial crisis and the COVID crisis, inflationary environment of 2022. We have finished the year up 10.3%. Last year, the portfolio is up 12.9%. So again, we're coming off of two double-digit years, which has been very beneficial. When we look at all of these return percentages and we put them in numbers, again, I just want to reiterate in the numbers that you see in the top left corner, the contributions of $111.4 million since inception and withdrawals of $129.4 million, that means net earnings that you've earned in the portfolio has been $168.9 million since inception. So certainly very successful and beneficial in terms of creating the return stream that you need, as well as meeting the goals of the fund.
Are there any questions? Ms. Sprinkle?
You have already said that because of our new administration, there could be changes. How nimble are you guys when you see tariffs coming or some sort of something big? Can you, because you say you meet once a year as a group, so I don't know, what do you do to work with that?
So we're monitoring the overall economic and financial market landscape every day. So the current investment policy statement has a target for each of the asset classes, and then also has a range that allows us to move the portfolio. And so as long as we're staying within those ranges, we can move the portfolio in any given market day. And so I'd say that we have appropriate ranges and we can be nimble given any incoming news that we think could substantially impact market conditions.
So you don't have to wait to meet to make those changes?
No.
Okay, great to hear. Mm-hmm. One other question, sorry. And Margarita, you can help me. I think the permanent fund committee and we as a body voted to take a little more risk this past year, did we not?
That was last year.
Last year. So is that still in place or do we?
Yes, that is still in place. That is still in code.
And do we feel that's, I guess it looks successful, right?
Yes, she's referring to the when we added in the U.S. high yields.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so right now we don't have any recommendations to change the overall strategy. I think that it aligns well with the long-term goals of the fund. Now, when we think about our forward-looking return assumptions for the portfolio, if they fall below a level or exceed a level relative to your goals, we will recommend to either pare back risk or increase risk profile if we need to. But right now, I think we're well aligned with the goals.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Clearworth.
Yeah, thank you for coming up again. Looking at 2022, when the valuation went down, was that primarily because of the bonds and interest rates are low, and so you have to report them on the balance sheet as an unrealized loss? Is that the primary reason?
Right, and so going into the COVID crisis, interest rates were very low, and then post-COVID, we saw inflation spike, and when that happened, the central banks began increasing interest rates, and because the bonds that we held were of lower interest rates, they did decline in value. And so I actually am quite proud of how the portfolio returned in 2022, even though it was down 13.3%. That aligned with the decline in the bond market. So bonds lost over 13% in 2022, broadly speaking. Global stocks were down 18%. And so the portfolio, even though it's a long-term portfolio that has a decent amount of risk in it, actually performed in line with the bond market as a whole. And so part of that performance really had to do with the fact that we added an investment strategy called alternative beta that provides some diversification from the stock and bond market kind of just after COVID. And that really helped provide some cushion to the bond and stock market. And so we own this sleeve inside of the fund that is designed to act differently than stocks and bonds, which is really beneficial when interest rates rise in an inflationary environment.
Mm-hmm. So did you sell off any of the bonds, muni bonds or whatever you had there at a loss, or are you holding them to the maturity where you will not experience a loss? What's your strategy on that?
We can sell bonds and realize a loss at some point because we don't hold bonds to maturity always, because if we purchase individual bonds and hold them to maturities, our actual duration exposure or sensitivity to interest rates will get shorter and shorter. And so we want to own a portfolio that can provide some positive returns if interest rates decline. And so we keep our overall duration exposure in line with the U.S. Aggregate benchmark. And that could mean that we're selling bonds at a loss or a gain, but overall we're actually managing that side of the portfolio for a total return that includes income as well as price changes to interest rates. So we can sell bonds at a loss.
I realize you can, but have you in the last 2 years, have you sold many of those, or are they still on the books hoping that the interest rates go down and their value goes up?
I would say in the past 2 years, we probably have sold bonds at a loss and we probably held some bonds. And so our fixed income team actually actively manages that side of the portfolio. And we own a very diversified mix of corporate bonds and U.S. bonds. And that, again, is actively managed relative to the benchmark.
And there's also just, I would add, you know, it's quite a large fixed portfolio. As the securities roll off too, those are being reinvested. And where all the new funds go in is also a big piece of how that fixed income portfolio can be reshaped without necessarily having to sell off pieces of it to reshape it. You're gonna constantly have to reconstitute it as things are maturing.
Did you buy quite a few bonds when I got up to interest rates peaked about a year ago at 5-6% or whatever they were? Did you get into that again, or did you stay out of it?
We bought high as interest rates increased. We did buy bonds that had, you know, higher interest rates, and so I think that's helped the overall income or interest portion of the portfolio come in line around 4.9%, whereas historically it's been around 2%.
Do you share with the board a roll-off chart for the bonds, what years are maturing?
Yes, we share with the committee an overall compliance report that details all the bonds that we purchased for the quarter, as well as a list of all the bonds that we own and everything that we've sold.
And what years they mature?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Your comments on gold are interesting. how are you doing that? What vehicles are you using for that?
We're using an exchange-traded fund that owns physically backed gold. We're not doing it on a futures basis.
Okay. One other question, and...
Ms. Therrien, do you have any questions?
I said I've got one more, Mayor.
Oh, sorry.
I'll wait till Jerry's done, then I might have something.
I apologize, Mr. Clayworth, I thought you were done.
She's on the board, she knows everything already.
That doesn't mean she doesn't have a question.
The state of Alaska is looking at a DB program again for retirees. And they're basing it on 7.25% return. I mean, would you take and if they don't do that, they're going into the red. So you're going to base retirement on that. Would you take a client that demands of you to make 7.25% on average for, say, 10 years? Would you ever consider doing that?
I do think that's a reasonable long-term return expectation if you have the asset base to support exposure into not only public markets, but also private markets as well, similar to what the State of Alaska Permanent Fund does.
It's a difficult target to hit.
Yeah, I think it's you'd have to take more risk to hit that. Okay, well... It seems to be where we're headed, unfortunately.
Are there any other questions for our visitors?
And this is Valerie. Just a comment. When our committee finished meeting, there's going to be a review on April 30th, and we'll see whether or not ACPM has any recommendations to the City Council for any changes. But that'll give us some time to see what the market is doing over the next 2 or 3 months to see with regard to tariffs and the other new president's policies.
Thank you.
And we, I don't know if you had it, but it's 6.520373 for a withdrawal to the city in December of 25, which is a 146,000 increase over last year, which I thought was great.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Have a good evening.
And motion to adjourn.
I don't think we need.
Is there a second? Seeing no opposition, we're adjourned.